Welcome to the Behavioral Health Business Perspectives Podcast. I'm Bob Holly, Managing Editor of BHB, your go-to source of behavioral health industry news and insights. In this episode of Perspectives, I'm talking to Samer Malik, the CEO of Firsthand, and Marie Hanna, one of the company's peers in the Nashville area. I wanted to get Firsthand on the podcast for a bunch of reasons, one of which is the spotlight that has been placed on peer support models in 2023. A good example of that is HHS and SAMHSA recently dropping new national model standards for peer support certification, which is a pretty big deal. We're going to dive into that news and explore Samer's backstory, Firsthand's business model, what it actually means to be a peer, and so much more over the next 30 minutes or so. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. Oh, and by the way, this is one of our very first episodes of the Behavioral Health Business Perspectives podcast. We launched this month with Firsthand and also my conversation with Aware Recovery Care CEO Brian Holzer. Make sure to check that episode out too. You can find all of our current and future podcasts on SoundCloud and Apple Podcasts. If you're interested in learning more, or hey, maybe even discussing sponsorship opportunities, reach out to podcast@bhbusiness.com. That's podcast@bhbusiness.com. Let's get to it. Samer, Marie, thank you so much for joining me. You're both pioneers of sorts coming on the first BHB podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And I'll note to all the listeners tuning in, obviously we have Samer, who's the CEO of Firsthand, but Marie's actually one of the first ever community hires for the company. And she, prior to this hopping on, described herself as an OG of the company. So Marie, really honored to have you here as well.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, I thought, you know, a good place to start would be at the very beginning to help folks really understand what Firsthand is trying to do. Could you kind of give me the Firsthand origin story, Samer?
Sure. Happy to. And before anything, I just want to say thank you for having us. It's humbling to be here and be part of the early series. So thank you for inviting Firsthand. We're excited to share our work.
Of course, it's always been a pleasure working with Firsthand, and thanks for, you know, supporting us on our stories and also coming out to our in-person events. It's been really great following Firsthand.
We are together with many others building an ecosystem here, so kudos to many. So the origin story of Firsthand. There were a few other partners in the early days who had similar experiences to mine, working with community mental health centers, working inside of community mental health centers, really seeing that these organizations were delivering life-changing work. The work that folks like Marie were doing, supporting individuals, really transformed the lives of folks who otherwise didn't have many other resources. These safety net organizations were providing a place for folks to find companionship, find treatment, start a pathway to recovery. And yet, so many folks are struggling and are unengaged. And so Firsthand was really built out of recognizing that there's some great work happening in communities today, but far too many folks are not engaging with those services. In fact, for every three folks engaging with these life-changing community services, seven are not engaged with these programs, yet struggle with serious mental illness and tend to lack the resources to engage well. And so Firsthand was really born on how do we find those seven out of 10 and help them plug into the existing structures that are there today.
What were you doing before Firsthand, and why did this model, the peer approach, really resonate with you?
Yeah, so I spent a decade building a telepsychiatry business focused on improving access to psychiatric care in the safety net communities. So working alongside social service agencies and community mental health centers, and using telemedicine to improve access to psychiatric care in those settings where patients needed psychiatric support, but providers weren't necessarily available in those settings. And it was in that work that I got to spend time right alongside folks like Marie, therapists, counselors, who are doing really important work for the patients we were serving via telemedicine. And that's where some of the appreciation for the great work happening in community was born. That business became the largest telepsychiatry business in the country, was acquired by Optum, spent a few years at Optum really learning so much about how health plans work, how health plan contracting works, where the needs may be, and how to solve problems that are top of mind for leading health plans across the country.
Awesome. Thank you, Samer. And Marie, you know, I mentioned you're one of the company's OGs. When did you first join Firsthand, and what kind of inspired you to join the company?
Oh, yes. I joined Firsthand on January 31st of 2022, and I've been a part of the team for over a year. As a peer, I bring my personal experience of overcoming challenges and finding recovery, which allows me to connect deeply with individuals in the community we serve.
And for those listening who maybe don't understand what a peer does, how would you really describe your role and the unique perspective you bring to working with Firsthand's patients?
Yes, my role as a peer is to offer support, guidance, and empathy to patients or individuals who may have experienced similar struggles like me. I help them navigate their recovery journey and connect with necessary resources.
And we were talking earlier, and you're mostly in the Nashville area, correct?
Yes, I am. Yes, correct.
I'm really excited. I've never been to Nashville, but next month we, Aging Media Network, has a conference there. So I have a long list of places I want to hit up. I know Nashville has a great food scene.
We'll be happy to have you.
Samer, I want to go back to you for a second and actually read something that you told BHB editor Laura Lovett for one of her stories on Firsthand. This was from December 2022. It's a little long, everybody who's tuning in, so bear with me for just a second. And this is from Samer. A lot of the individuals that are struggling with serious mental illness and have very high costs of care are unengaged. Often it's because trust has been broken. Providers have mistreated them, and so they're not always inclined to want to seek care. And where the magic of the peer comes in is the ability to say, I am a living example of recovery. Could you unpack those comments for us here, Samer?
Sure. And of course, Marie is even more well-suited to address this. But at the business level, what we recognize is that that 70% of this cohort that's unengaged, folks are not unengaged because they don't want to get better. They do, and they're trying hard every day. But their interactions with the health system and the social services system hasn't given them hope that that's the pathway forward. A lot of folks get picked up involuntarily and end up in an emergency room or a hospital against their will, or even worse, end up incarcerated because our system doesn't really have the right supports for folks struggling with debilitating serious mental illness. So when that's your track record with the programs and systems that are out there, you end up in a hospital against your will or you end up incarcerated, why would you want to engage with the system proactively? And that's really where the magic of Marie's experience and the experience of so many on our team comes in, is to say, no, that's not the only way. There are better ways. Recovery is possible. And I found it. And if you believe in me, maybe we can find that path together.
Marie, anything you'd like to add to that?
Absolutely. I'm just going to put in recovery is not just about overcoming past challenges, but also discovering a path toward independence and control over one's life. And through Firsthand's program and support, individuals gain that confidence to change or take control of their own well-being.
And Samer, before we get too much further into this conversation, I was hoping, could you just give us an overview of Firsthand today? What markets are you in? How many peers are you working with? That kind of info.
Yeah, so today we are operating in Tennessee, Ohio, and Florida. We're in cities big and small. So we're in Nashville, where Marie is. We're in Akron, Dayton, Columbus, Chattanooga, Jacksonville. So, you know, all across those three states, the needs are profound. And folks are out there looking for better support all across the country. Today, we have a team of about 250 folks, most of which are community-based individuals with lived experience, like Marie, every day going out to shelters and churches and bridges and trying to find folks who were tasked with supporting.
And, you know, I know you have a payer background, so I wanted to ask, too, what does the payment landscape look for Firsthand? What are the main reimbursement streams for your services?
You know, I think the magic in our model and what we hope unlocks other peer-based and lived experience-based programs is there is a lot of upside to be had by using lived experience to help individuals find recovery. And so our model is one where we're really focused on a value-based arrangement with our health plan partners. We only do well if they do well, and the health plan only does well if individuals we are engaging find a pathway to recovery, find better care, and reduce utilization of high-cost care settings like the emergency room and the inpatient setting. What we know to be true is that the work Marie and her teammates are doing is demonstrating those types of outcomes, that folks reduce their utilization of ED and hospitalization stays dramatically after engaging with our team. And it's in those savings that we can justify the intensiveness of our model, the field-based orientation of our work.
And sorry if this is a silly question, Samer, but you know, when we talk about the payer partners you're working with, are we talking mostly Medicaid plans? Is it commercial? You know, what space specifically?
You know, there are individuals struggling with serious mental illness across all payer products, Medicare, commercial, and Medicaid. But we are predominantly focused on the Medicaid cohort, largely because we see the greatest share of serious mental illness in that cohort and also the greatest need in terms of acuity, excess utilization of high-cost services, and social gaps to be filled. So we feel the problem is most pronounced in Medicaid, and therefore if we can do good work here, that opens the door for us to have impact across other payer product lines as well.
Got it. Thank you. We might circle back to that in a little bit, but Marie, I want to go back to you. Without, you know, really giving away any sensitive personal information or anything like that, could you maybe share one or two times in your role as a peer where you thought, wow, I'm really making a difference and this model really is effective?
Yes, absolutely. It's incredibly rewarding for me to witness the transformation of individuals who start feeling down and isolated about themselves, but eventually find hope, support, and a sense of self-worth. So one of the examples, there's an individual that was helped. We were trying to find her. And so we did get the address. So we went to her location. And I thought that she was not there. She didn't answer her door, only to come to find out that she was outside. And I didn't know her name or what she looked like. But I was just trying to help somebody with groceries, a random person, only to find that it was her. So it's amazing because she calls me her angel, because there was no way I knew what she looked like and she didn't know what I looked like. And it was just amazing how all of that unfolded. So that was amazing.
And just, yeah, and just your willingness to kind of step up and help that person. I'm sure that goes a long way in establishing that relationship moving forward.
Right. And then there's another individual I've helped where he's gone through a lot of stuff, you know, in his life. And he just wanted somebody to listen to him and relate to him. And he likes gangster music. And
who doesn't like that music?
Oh, right. So, but I don't really get into it, but I do. There's a Christian rapper. He is a gangster Christian rapper. And one day we were just sitting down talking, me and the individual, and he just was saying that he didn't have anybody to relate to him, had no friends, no support systems, no family. Just no support at all. And by me sitting down, talking with him, I was able to connect him with this Christian rapper as far as some songs, some rapping songs. And once he listened to the rap, he started to cry because that was the first time he's ever felt loved and someone hear him out. And now he listens to this Christian rapper all the time. And so he shares that with me every day. And it's helped awesome. Him a lot.
That is awesome. I want to shift gears a little bit because one of the reasons why I was so excited to have Firsthand come on the podcast while we're launching is There's been a lot of traction for peer-based models lately and a lot of recognition from, you know, both private payers, but also the very top of the federal government and some major healthcare decision makers. HHS and SAMHSA, to be precise, they recently released national model standards for peer support certification. You know, I kind of wanted to ask each of you, why is that important? Is it important? I mean, Marie, I imagine that when you have HHS and SAMHSA saying, hey, there need to be real standards for this, it helps affirm what you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. I believe it's important to continuously improve our skills and knowledge to better serve the community. I know firsthand how diverse we are, and as a work team, and to help our community, which is why I think being updated and connected to the community through training and recertification is essential.
At a systems level, it's terribly important to see our regulatory infrastructure support and advocate for the power of lived experience. It's real. We are seeing it every day in all of our markets that building trust and helping folks engage and stay adherent to care and recovery is built on a foundation of trust, and that lived experience is unique in its ability to generate that trust. So for HHS and CMS to signal, hey, we value that too, and we're willing to find reimbursement structures to compensate for that in the marketplace, suggests we're opening up a whole new frontier of labor supply in the marketplace. So many folks like Marie, who otherwise wouldn't be able to put their skills to work in helping folks find recovery, will soon be able to, because these standards are coming to place, they're becoming protocols and certifications that then lead to putting those skills to work in a way that is remunerable in our healthcare system. So very, very positive and bullish on what this means.
So we have the federal government increasingly recognizing the value of peer support models. What about, you know, some of the payer partners that we were just talking about? And I'm using that term very broadly, but do payers understand the value that companies like FirstHand specifically provides, and are they willing to pay for it?
You know, lots and lots of credit to the health plans here. They've, in our experience, been deploying peer-based models for years, some of them even more than a decade. They've been a little bit ahead of the curve here. Part of the challenge, though, in health plan operations around this is this is one of many, many, many programs that a health plan may be running. So what you haven't seen from health plans that have been employing peers historically is really building those programs to scale. And I think that's where an outside organization like FirstHand can really be supportive, is to say, you've got a lot of other things going on. This is one thing we are specialized in and are very good at. And we've built an entire organization and brand around supporting folks with lived experience, recognizing that the company is named after it, right? The firsthand experience folks have, building a compensation and a benefits structure that accommodate folks as they're moving through recovery. There are ups and downs in recovery, even for folks who are working with us today, and building an organization and a people culture that recognizes that and accepts that is something that can be hard to do if you're a national health plan. So our ability to specialize in this allows us to then go back to the health plans and say, you've been doing this work and it's good work. We can help you bring it to scale because of our specialization in this way.
One more quick follow-up question for you, Samer, and then Marie, I want to go back and talk to you about your experience again. But you know, you mentioned at the top of this conversation how value-based care was really front and center for what FirstHand is trying to do. What are some of the proof points, so to speak, that you go to payers with and say, hey, this is the kind of impact that we could have? I mean, what are some of the outcomes that you're really tracking and sharing with payers?
Yeah, this is something that I'm most excited about in this work. So first off, remember, the members that a health plan assigns to us are members that the health plan and their other providers have not been able to engage. So these are folks that haven't been touched by other programs the health plans have. A health plan gives us 100 names, for example, and you give us 90 days, we will have engaged 50 of those 100 folks. Our engagement rates coming in at 50% are way above market expectations here. And then even more importantly, if you look at month six, we've retained engagement with about 90% of the folks that we engage. So folks not only are willing to trust us in being partners in recovery, they also stick with us in a way that's uncommon for this cohort. If you were to find one of these 100 individuals and plug them into a traditional community-based program, by month six, 30% chance they're still retained in that program and engaged, but we're on the other end of the spectrum at 90% retention. So our engagement rates and our retention are certainly starting points in recognizing the power of lived experience, the power of a comprehensive model, and the work our team is doing. But then beyond that, right, for us to be economically viable, we have to generate savings back to the health plan that allow them to invest in our model. And what we're seeing is all very promising. We see a reduction in emergency room utilization on the order of 20% for this high utilizing cohort. That is more than enough to pay for our model, given how frequently this cohort is using high expense acute services. There are all kinds of other measures we can point to as well. Our HEDIS performance tends to be 90th percentile or better, and our members, satisfaction, our NPS tends to be best in class as well. So we're feeling very good about the outcomes we've been able to generate in Tennessee, Ohio, and Florida, and look forward to expanding the model from there.
Thank you, Samer, for all that great info. Marie, circling back to you, and something we haven't really touched on yet is training. Thinking back to when you first joined Firsthand, what was that process like? What exactly does it actually take to become a peer? Because I'm sure we're going to have some listeners who are maybe interested in doing it themselves.
Absolutely. So the very key aspect to look at is one must have lived experience, whether it's related to substance abuse, mental health, or a combination of both. This is a valuable qualification that can help us better understand and connect with the people we serve. Okay. And then, to become, once you, get on the website, usually, Tennessee has a website. So this is probably in every state is a little bit different. So if you get on, one of your states, or website and look up how to become a certified peer recovery specialist, then it should state the requirements in that format. But to become a certified peer support specialist, one must go through training that covers many different aspects of the role. In my experience, the training includes learning about boundaries, listening skills, self-care, evidence-based practices, and many more. It is important to apply this knowledge in all aspects of our work, especially connecting with individuals with both medical and mental or substance abuse or SMI, serious mental illness, practices, and more.
Samer, this is a question for you again, and it's kind of a two-parter. I was going to ask, do you think we're going to see more peer-based models popping up in the future? And then as a second part of that question, is it difficult to find peers? Because I imagine if the answer is yes, that could kind of limit how fast peer models could expand.
Great question. So first, let me start with that second part. Today, there are 30,000 to 40,000 certified peers across the country. But to Marie's response just a moment ago, that doesn't include the many more tens of thousands of folks who have lived experience but have not yet pursued certification. So there's a very meaningful volume of folks who can come to the table and bring their lived experience to benefit individuals who are currently struggling. So the labor supply here is certainly abundant at this juncture. Today, we're at a place where for every one peer posting we put out, we're getting 10 to 15 applicants, and yet we can only hire one. And so I am certainly hopeful that other peer models are emerging to really help folks take those experiences and put them to work in the marketplace in ways that are not only beneficial to individuals being served, but also beneficial to the employee. Numerous studies and data have shown that even if someone is still in recovery, having stable employment can improve the recovery and the outcomes considerably, reducing cost of care over the recovery journey by 30%+. So I see it as an imperative. I'm certainly hopeful that more peer models emerge, given how many folks are out there looking to make a difference in a way like Firsthand is allowing folks to.
We typically try to keep these podcast conversations to about 30 minutes, and we're already 5 minutes or so away from that. So I want to start wrapping things up. Samer, what's on the agenda for the rest of 2023 or even early 2024? What else could we expect to see from Firsthand? And then Marie, after Samer, I was going to ask you too, what's on the agenda for you for the rest of this year? Samer, we'll start with you though.
Sure. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. We just spent much of the summer launching in new markets across Ohio, Dayton, Columbus, Cincinnati. We're turning on markets like Youngstown, Canton, Toledo later this summer. And so it's going to be important for us to make sure those markets are performing well and we're maintaining a high bar on culture. It will take us some time to ensure we're doing as well there as we are in some of our legacy markets in, say, Nashville or Memphis or Columbus. So we've got our work cut out for us really to ensure that the new markets we've turned on continue to perform as well or better than the markets we have historically. Certainly hopeful that we can continue down the growth path here, given the outcomes are positive and our health plan partners are responding in kind to that. Outcomes that they are seeing.
And Marie, what's on the docket for you?
Yes, looking ahead to the rest of 2023, I'm prioritizing staying consistent and living Firsthand's values, such as putting individuals at the center and remaining teachable. I also want to help other peers that become employees at Firsthand just navigate Firsthand and how we are able to help them connect with the individuals in the community.
Okay. One of my last questions, probably the last question, just considering the time here. We've done a lot of similar podcasts for some of our other Aging Media Network publications like Home Healthcare News and Hospice News. And in those, I always like to try to squeeze in one open-ended kind of fun question. So here it goes for the BHB Perspectives podcast. And Marie, we'll start with you on this. If you had a magic wand and you could change one thing about the behavioral health care that's delivered in this country, what would it be and why?
So, yes, I will say improving the psychiatric hospitals. Sadly, we see too many people going through a hospitalization process and come out without being properly prepared for the future. Many of our individuals, they just go in and come out. Many of the psychiatrists and the psychologists responsible for care seem to focus on managing symptoms rather than developing a long-term care plan that takes into account what is truly best for the individual. And then this is where my passion for peers and crisis intervention comes from. I believe we need to take the time to listen to individuals and understand their unique needs to help create a brighter future and establish more hope within the community.
That's such a great response. I almost want to just wrap there and not even hear from you, Samer. But, you know, of course, I want your perspective as well. So same question to you. If you had a magic wand, what would you change about behavioral health in this country?
Well, if this doesn't live up to Marie's response quality, you can always cut it from the podcast. From my perspective, I think one of the big imperatives here is really to unite or integrate behavioral and medical dollars in our risk structures. A lot of models that are going to make a big difference, including Firsthand's, are required to support both the medical side and the behavioral side of the equation. Historically, our country has financed those two sides differentially, or at least paid for them through different programs. We need to take a whole person approach to support individuals who are struggling most deeply. Certain states like Tennessee have pioneered integrating behavioral and medical dollars. New York has done something similar. More integration of the behavioral and medical side, I believe, will unlock a lot more innovation and support for those who need it the most.
I've been talking to Samer Malik, the CEO of Firsthand, and Marie Hanna, one of the company's amazing peers. Samer, Marie, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me and for, again, being pioneers on the BHB podcast.
Thank you much, Bob.
Thank you.
That does it for this episode of the Behavioral Health Business Perspectives podcast. I'm Bob Holly with Aging Media Network, the WTWH Media Company. Thanks for listening.